Namaste. One of the questions that people are asking during this period of whatever is called as lockdown, I rather would call it locked in, because we cannot go out so much, so freely, so frequently. So how do we spend time? Now, this is a modern misery, actually. If we, many of us who have grown up in the villages, if we remember the days when we grew up in the villages, we were hardly having these outings. School, you come back, go to play, and then you were with your friends within this small little mohalla, in the small little place. But as the civilization, so-called civilization, has picked up pace, we have filled our moments. In fact, there were so many moments when we could reflect. I was just remembering as a child sleeping outside in the open under mosquito net, of course, because mosquitoes are there. But I know people who have slept without mosquito nets, and looking at the stars, and so much time to reflect. To stand and stare, as the poet puts it, because there was time. You finish the homework quickly. I used to finish it in the school days, in school itself. And after the game, there was time. So much time to either read something in general, and lots of books one could read, especially during holidays. And even then there was time when we could, because there were no lights, so after a point of time you have to be in the bed. But there was so much time to think, spend time to think and reflect. Now this is something we have almost forgotten, because we are all the time busy meeting people. We have filled up our life. There is a beautiful poem of Sri Aurobindo, Ahana. There, the voice of the sensuous mortal, who is driven by the senses, all the time in this direction, that direction, by smell, by sight, by touch, by taste. Foodies all the time by taste or by hearing. So we have people all the time busy with, drawn by the senses. You know, when we take the image of the Upanishads and the Gita, that the soul is the rathi sitting inside, and the horses are the senses. Now if we allow, imagine a rath chariot, or even in modern context a car on four wheels, and we just sit there and we let the car be on auto and just don't put anything on it, that where I want to go, what I want to do, and just let it go. What's going to be the result? If it is horses, surely they are going to let loose, and sooner than later we'll be on the road breaking our bones. And if it's a car, much worse fate may come. Now that's how we often lead our life. It's not true of everyone, but many persons, they lead their life without even as much as reflecting what really is the aim. Even when people turn, take to a path, or they have somehow entered into it, or have a belief system, more than a path, path is still something conscious. They have some kind of belief in someone, some guru, some Babaji, some God. Still they are not aware of their aspiration. The aspiration is not born. Why are they walking on the path? Is it just to have some protection? As the mother puts it, that before you start yoga, you must know why you want to take up the yoga. And then she says, to serve humanity, to have power, to become a yogi. None of these things show that you are ready for the path. So it's very good to sit and reflect, maybe redefine many things. There are things like, for instance, we use the word love very loosely. One of the most, really one word which has been most profaned, as Shelley puts it so beautifully. So we have profaned this word too often by using it. Now, what really does this mean? Is it what mostly most of us think, the human love, where there is a lot of sentimentality, attachment, ties, etc.? Well, this is one kind of love. There is another kind of love, the way we understand, where, like an animal love, then there is possessiveness, jealousy. Is this love? Or there is a much more mighty and vaster love that leans into the abyss, but only to uplift everything towards the great becoming, unfolding of the divine. Now, then we can reflect. Rather than living by the opinion of people, like, there are people who have lived by certain opinions about Ramayana and Mahabharata. Why did Rama banish Sita? So they go on talking about it. Why did he ask for Agni Pariksha? Give a thought, reflect. But reflect not from the position of doubt, but from the position of faith. This is the difference. The position of doubt is that I take it a priori that Rama is just an ordinary mortal and therefore he has done things which are not right. Well, he may be a mortal in his outer being, or he had to, all avatars have a mortal side, a human side. But if we take the position that Rama is the divine incarnate, and now we say that we have faith in you, but we don't understand your action, then Rama himself will reveal to us his action, whether it's a symbolic nature or what has gone on within him. After all, we don't know, even an ordinary human being, when he takes certain actions, often people say, oh, Buddha left his wife and went away. Ask Buddha's heart. He would say, what will he say? He will say, well, I know my wife would and son would have suffered when I left. But you know what? I was carrying in my heart the burden of a million people suffering. What do we say to that? Ask Sri Aurobindo, why did he leave Mrilalini Devi? This question was asked to Sri Aurobindo. Why do these great ones, whether it's Socrates or Buddha, or he says, Sri Aurobindo, why do they get married and then leave their wives? He says, well, very simple, Sri Aurobindo says with his sense of humor, when they get married, they are perfectly ordinary people, but they change. And when the change comes, all the circumstances must change. So this urge to evolve, rather than being tied to a new way of life, to an old way of life. Now, this is a challenge thrown at us to evolve, to redefine ourselves, to redefine existence, to redefine what this world is. Now, this is a wonderful moment when whatever is most occupying us, even let's say that, though I must say that it's a kind of mass hypnosis, and mass hypnosis coming from every side, that there's nothing else people are showing, as if, you know, nothing else is happening in this world except the deaths due to poor fellows, I wonder, that who are dying of many other reasons, dying in hunger, dying in poverty, you know, so many things, but as if they are unimportant. The only people important are those who are dying in with a particular virus, whatever it be. Still, we should try to go deep within and reflect, what is this? What this malady is about? Why has it come? Are we so fragile? Can we really become immune to it? Is there a way within that we can become immune to all these events? So then, if we look at it like this, then this event can become a wonderful catalyst for the future. We can, to help ourselves, we can read all that great yogis, mystics, occultists, those who are in the know-how of the forces, they have written about it. We are only looking at it the so-called surface scientific view. Now, surface scientific view is valid in its own domain, and nobody denies that. But there is a science beyond science and a super science, as the mother says in the prayers, that but the supreme science, O Lord, is to give ourselves to thee, and therein lies the perfect cure. So what is she really referring to? So let us go. There are layers and layers of science itself. There is a material science. Behind it, there is a biological science. Behind the biological science, there is a psychological science and how it impacts our body and brain. Behind the psychological science, there is a spiritual science, or rather an occult science, the whole domain of the invisible. It's not only the virus which is invisible, but vibrations which are invisible, fears that are invisible, suggestions which are invisible, and beyond all this, there is the supreme science, the supreme who is invisible to us, the supreme Lord himself. Now, this is a time when we can reflect, and all this knowledge is just waiting to be discovered. That is what Sri Aurobindo tells us. There is nothing, nothing can be taught from outside, because all knowledge is within. All that is needed is to open this inner door or the door above, and all knowledge will come rushing into this like a sea. What is the way to open this door? And that's where we have a clue in Savitri, and the clue is given in mantra, as when the mantra sings in yoga's ear. So mantra is one of the keys. There are many keys, but one of the keys is mantra. That with the help of the mantra, we go within, we go above, we focus our whole consciousness on either inside the head. I'm talking of in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, there are people who talk about Bhrumadre in the center of the eyebrows, etc. Now, Sri Aurobindo doesn't much talk about it. He says that can sometimes shut you into a limited formation. But concentration within the head or above the head, which gives us freedom. Or concentration deep within the heart, in the center of the chest. And we can take the help of the mantra. The simplest mantra in this yoga. Sri Aurobindo and the mother speaks of simply the name of mother. In this yoga, there is no mantra except the mother's name or mine and the mother's name. So he uses that, he doesn't use of his name, but he says either the mother's name or mine and the mother's name. See, mother's name is very simple, ma, 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 ma. Or mother's and my name, which means Om Shurvindo Mira. Now, or mother's Shurvindo is my refuge. But it should something spring up from within. And taking the help of that mantra, we go inside to unlock the doors. It's a wonderful opportunity. Otherwise, we often say we have no time, no time, no time. But here is a time. Now, why do we feel so frustrated when we don't have, when we are in this situation? Because our consciousness naturally rushes out. It is used to it. Now, when we look at it very closely, we'll see much of this is basically running, chasing illusions. Much of this, including relationships, there's so much artificiality. We think we cannot do without meeting someone. But slowly we'll begin to realize that actually, ultimately, there are very, very few people whom we must meet. And most important, the one person whom we must meet always and communicate with him is the divine within. So now the scales are reversed. Earlier, we would find some time to sit in contemplation for the divine. Rest of the time is busy with all kinds of activity. Now for a change, we have less and less activity and more time to sit in contemplation of the divine, to raise certain questions related to the eternal. And in this context, I just want to read this very interesting message card. It came on 21st February. I must say it is prophetic in a sense. When you have nothing to do, you become restless. You run about. You meet friends. You take a walk to speak only of the best. I mean, these are good things, but this is what we do. I'm not referring to things that are absolutely, that are obviously not to be done. Instead of that, sit down quietly before the sky, before the sea, or under trees, whatever is possible. And try to realize one of these things. To understand why you live. To learn how you must live. To ponder over what you want to do and what should be done. What is the best way of escaping from the ignorance and falsehood and pain in which you live? The mother. Namaste.